Welcome to Syntax, where we deliver tasty treats for web developers.
Welcome to Syntax. Today we are talking about accepting money on the internet. We're sponsored today by FreshBooks. We talked about FreshBooks in the last episode. And well, look who came over to sponsor an episode for us, which is pretty cool. I'm going to talk a little bit more about FreshBooks partway through the episode, but for now, all you have to know is that they are an awesome cloud accounting software, and you can get a 30-day free trial over at freshbooks.com/syntax and enter in syntax in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome, Scott. How you doing?
Doing super good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What are you working on these days?
A whole bunch of stuff. Recording some random new series, right? So like there's some series that I wanted to do for a long time, like go over some code pens that are popular or maybe making waves or people are talking about, and just sort of break down how they're done. Now, they don't have to be like super tough ones, but like just interesting for various reasons. Like the one I did for the first video was a really simple just like card flipping animation, but because of the use of like perspective and the use of Z transforms, it made it really interesting. And the code wasn't complex or difficult at all, but it was nice to sort of just like highlight what's going on in that stuff. So I'm also recording a couple of new series. I'm recording a free series on Gatsby right now that's going to be out soon. Actually, I have three episodes that are just waiting to be published, so I'll probably do that right after we're done recording. And then, and if you saw Figma's big release of their like 2.0 package or so, like prototyping features and stuff in there, you may have noticed a familiar voice on the video tutorials. So I got to do some videos for Figma, and it was really super cool, and hopefully I get to do a few more.
That's pretty cool. I've still yet to, for those who didn't hear the last time we talked about Figma, it's sort of like an online editor, sort of a replacement for Sketch, which is pretty neat. I'm excited to try it out.
Yeah, a lot of really, really cool features. Yeah, so what are you working on?
I am, today is actually a holiday. I didn't even realize the part of working for yourself is that you just take vacation whenever you want. And then I totally forgot when we scheduled this recording that today is a holiday, but nice. Totally fine, because I'm heading off on vacation next week. I'm working on GraphQL mostly. The last couple of weeks I've been like super heavy into understanding, reading the whole GraphQL spec, understanding what it is and how everything works. And then just the last, I don't know, week or two, I've been diving into and building quite a bit of stuff with Apollo, which is kind of neat, because like GraphQL is the sort of like GraphQL is like the spec, the standard, and then you have a GraphQL server, which I'm still investigating a couple different server possibilities. But in order to interface with the GraphQL server, there's this thing called Apollo, which is from the Meteor folks, where you can, it makes just fetching data, performing mutations, storing all of your data in a single Redux store, makes it all really, really easy. And it's been like, I've just been surprised at how like really nice it is to work with. So pretty happy about that.
Yeah. If you were to see my computer right now, I'd probably have like 6 or 7 tabs open between Apollo and GraphQL stuff, just because it's so much there right now. And it's really, really cool tech.
Yeah, it seems to be really heating up. It's all I've been hearing about for the last month or two.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while now, but it seems like people are starting to really get into it. So
yeah,
I think that. You should see some stuff from me on that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think some of the reason it's heating up is just that there's more technology around it, right? Like you said, GraphQL spec has been there, but now, you know, Apollo's getting, you know, higher in version. It's getting a little bit more mature here. And there's things like GraphQL and all that stuff that you've mentioned before. So yeah, really cool stuff.
It's finally getting, like, I think, approachable for us mortals, which is funny, because I initially thought that it was a bit hard to get up and running. But now, both with GraphQL and Apollo, I feel like that's it. Whereas when I was initially learning some React stuff, I was like, really? That much? And now I'm on the flip side where, like, that's it? Oh, wow. We talked about it earlier. It's like it's a little bit of magic, which I definitely like.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking to integrate into my stack as well. But there's some very, I mean, obviously, because it's written by the people behind Meteor, that the using Apollo in Meteor is actually like, mm-hmm. is really nice. I'm just trying to find the time to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, cool.
So today we're going to talk about something we both have quite a bit of experience with, and that is accepting money on the internet. When you want somebody to buy something from you, how do you do that? What are the different services that you can use? What are the different code libraries we can use? What are some of the things you have to know about? I'm from Canada. I bill in US, so I've got a lot of like sort of gotchas when you're at from an international customer. So there's really a lot to sort of learn about how to best accept money on the internet and not get hosed on fees along the way, as well as make sure that you provide a really nice checkout experience for your users. So obviously I accept credit card and PayPal on all of my course websites. What about you, Scott? What are you using?
Yeah, so I'm also just accepting credit card and PayPal. Initially, it was just credit card, but I was getting a lot of pushback on not having PayPal, so I did add PayPal. You know, for reasons that we'll get into, it was
yes, always the most. I've got some hilarious notes here on PayPal.
Yeah, yeah, I know it's a total wreck, but yeah, so also doing both of those.
Cool. All right. Well, let's start with the sort of the three big services that make it easy to accept money on the internet, or the two that make it easy and the one that makes your life miserable. So there is Stripe, which is what's called like a payment processor or a payment gateway, which Stripe has taken all of the complexity of accepting credit cards on the internet and debit cards, and they're moving into some more stuff right now, but it's primarily credit cards. And the way that it works is that you accept the credit card on your actual website, and Stripe will take care of handling the number, checking if it's fraud, checking if it's correct, what are the CVC number, all of the sort of heavy lifting behind accepting a credit card on your website. Stripe will do that all for you. And then you just have to focus on building your app and not have to get into the nitty gritty of actually doing that. So Stripe is what I use primarily for all of my transactions. It is probably one of the best services I've ever worked with. Everything from how easy it is from a developer perspective. I think that it's been built as a developer first tool, because it's not really a consumer application. It's just a bunch of APIs and then a dashboard that you can see all of your data coming in.
Yeah.
When I set out to implement it in my app, I was like, wow, this is beautiful. It's super nice. The documentation is fantastic. All of their examples are really, really good.
Yeah.
Just really happy with Stripe.
Yeah. If I were to like have a documentation hall of fame, I think Stripe would be right up at the top there, and it's always been good, and it's only gotten better. You know, it's not like it was good and has, you know, stayed the same. They've improved it in so many ways over time that it's just made working with Stripe way, 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 way better than others, really. But yeah, I mean, overall, Stripe is the way to do it for that. I mean, the interface, the developer experience, everything has just been just. Pretty much a dream after working with others, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we said credit cards. It also does accept debit cards, which is pretty big for me, at least. I have a fairly large international audience who doesn't necessarily have credit card. So they do a lot of debit cards, a lot of what's called a Payoneer prepaid, which is sort of like it's like a rechargeable credit card that's pretty popular in India, a couple other places around the world. They do ACH transfers, which I've actually haven't done. I've got a few requests, but as far as I know, that's sort of like a direct withdrawal right from your bank account. Do you do any of that, Scott?
I have it configured to do that, but I have not accepted any transactions in that way. So yeah.
Cool.
I
would like to turn it on eventually. I would like to turn absolutely everything on. We'll talk about why I don't have all of those things turned on just right now. On the flip side, so Stripe is the best piece of software in the world. And then on the flip side, there's PayPal, which I like to gripe about PayPal. Everybody gripes about PayPal. And usually what happens when I gripe about PayPal is people are like, why don't you just use Stripe? But the thing about PayPal and Stripe is that they're not total replacements. Right. Obviously, PayPal will accept a credit card. But the big thing is that lots of people have a PayPal account with money loaded into it. What I found, I used to not accept PayPal because it's so hard to integrate into your actual your stack. But people have sort of like fun money or off the grid money or money that's not part of the daily budget in their household. And they're able to use that for buying things like training courses. So that was huge for me, as well as PayPal is big all across the world for people who don't necessarily have credit card, debit card. Most people will have a PayPal account that they can use to buy your courses. So when I integrated PayPal into it, it was my sales went up quite a bit. I used to manually do it, and when I integrated it myself, quite a few people started buying it just because it was available to them.
Yeah, I had the same experience in terms of sales going up or whatever, finding that people just, you know, they can't use Stripe for whatever reason, but they have this PayPal account, and I mean the demand was so huge for it just that adding it was a big boost to the site overall, but it sort of made it worth the pain of integrating it. We'll talk about that pain, I guess, in later on, but really it's just like a matter of developer experience, right? Between Stripe and PayPal, you add a PayPal, you get it working, and then yeah, that's it, you know.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk right now about like why don't people like PayPal? And there's a lot of reasons. First of all, they're a huge monopoly. They take a much larger cut than a lot of the processors, especially for me who's international. Mm-hmm. They seem to ding you. I think it adds up to about 4% of each transaction when somebody uses PayPal. They have been known to just randomly freeze funds. Mm-hmm. I still remember the call I got when I launched my React series. It was just blowing up, and I got my phone rings, and I look, and it says PayPal, and I was like, F, what are they going to do? And I picked up the phone. I was like, hello? And he's like, don't worry, we're not seizing your funds. That's the first thing he said. Oh, no. I was like, why are you calling me? And it was thankfully it was them being like, hey, like what's going on? What are you doing? Because my sales had spiked.
Yeah.
But they confirmed it, and it was always good. But I try to keep every dollar out of my PayPal account because there's so many horror stories of them just locking up everybody's money.
There is. And even like sort of shady stuff with maybe damaged goods and returns and basically money sort of floating in the nebula and sort of where those refunds are actually going or whatever. I mean, I think PayPal is one of those companies that it represents this big monolithic thing that's been around forever. And it's a necessary evil. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard problem to solve. Like I also wouldn't want to work there because not from like a developer standpoint, but like I wouldn't want to be PayPal trying to solve all of these problems because they have to deal with fraud and international government rules and all that. And that's what Stripe does so well is that Stripe makes it seem so easy, but I know behind the scenes that Stripe is doing some serious heavy lifting to make it easy for mm-hmm. us, the consumer. Mm-hmm. Whereas PayPal sort of drops all that complexity on your lap, whether it's in complex fees or in terms of like how to actually integrate PayPal into your stack is incredibly complex. There's probably 70 different names for different libraries, different ways that you can. There's like PayPal Banana and PayPal Deluxe and PayPal God. Pepperoni. And like there's like, and then by each country, they change the names of them. So if you ever want to look for documentation, it's just a black hole of documentation of examples that don't work anymore, of outdated libraries, and it's that, just a very, very poor developer experience.
That's the hardest part about working with PayPal is that, one, you don't know the name of anything that you're actually trying to do. Like, if I'm just trying to, you know, if I'm trying to integrate just a simple, you know, payment button that sends them to PayPal, comes back through, you know, a URL or something like that, what service is that? They don't make it obvious at all based on their naming. They don't, like you said, there's just 100 different names for things, and the developer experience couldn't be any worse. I know we both had the same experience of fully integrating. Like, I brought in like I thought I had everything totally good, and I'm getting some totally ambiguous error back when I hit their API, and it turns out, all the docs are out of date, and we just pushed a new version this week, but we didn't update any of the docs, so.
Yeah, they don't version their API either. Right. So I just had what was happening is that they just changed the JSON response that came back from the server randomly. And all of a sudden I had, actually I didn't have failing. I had the opposite, which was the ability for people to buy a course and then sign up multiple times, which luckily never happened, but it was totally doable.
Yeah,
is nuts.
I don't know. I'm optimistic that they've shown signs of improving it, but I don't know. It's like a giant tangled web of wires, right? Like there's so much legacy stuff. It's so large that untangling this like giant rat's nest of, I don't know, issues that they have over there.
Yeah.
I feel like
it's definitely hard. Like, I talked to Kent C. Dodds, who's fairly popular in JavaScript. He works at PayPal, and it's so sad to hear that I'm frustrated, which is amazing to hear. Like, there's obviously lots of really good people at PayPal there. I don't mean to demean your work at all. I'm sure you're doing really good stuff. Especially the interface of PayPal is getting really good. So the back end of managing used to be like, click something, sit and wait for 3 minutes while it loads, mm-hmm. and then like random errors where it just give you like Times New Roman error on a white screen. So that seems to be going away, and I think they're building a lot of React interfaces, which is cool. I just think it's going to take a long time.
The native app's really nice too. I found the native app experience to be better than the web experience overall. But I think they're definitely making improvements in a lot of great ways. So we'll see where that heads. I would love a better developer experience, or at least a more reliable one. And then, I've been putting off integrating my subscription service into PayPal. I have subscriptions and they're all done through Stripe. And so I get a lot of people asking for subscriptions through PayPal, and I just don't know. I haven't decided if I want to bite that bullet yet. Now it's just normal payments. Yeah. So we'll see.
So at this point, you're probably screaming at your podcast player being like, why don't you just use the third one, which is Braintree? Mm-hmm. So PayPal went out and just bought an entire sort of a processing company like Stripe, which was called Braintree. And it does a lot of the same things to what Stripe does. But the one huge benefit to Braintree is that it has PayPal baked in, meaning that if you're accepting credit card or PayPal, it doesn't really matter because you just use one single set of JavaScript APIs to interact with Braintree, and then it gives all of that for you. So I get this all the time. A lot of people are like, why don't you use Braintree? I wanted to answer it. Maybe I'll point people to this podcast because I get this question all the time. It seems really good. The APIs are really, really nice. I've actually integrated it into my entire stack already. The downside to it from my side is actually what's called red tape, which means that in Canada, Braintree just sits on top of another credit card processing company, and you need to go through their entire vetting process to become a merchant with that underlying credit card company. So when I initially applied for it, they first asked me for like the actual website that it was going to go on to, as well as your terms of service and your refund policy and all of the stuff, which I didn't have because the website wasn't launched yet. So there was no way for me to launch with Braintree because they were telling me you needed the website up first. And then once the website is up, in Canada at least, this is not in the US, I know it's much different, it's about a 3 to 4 week wait for them to actually approve you. And that is per domain name. So the way that I sell my courses is that I launch a new domain name for every single course. And they need to do this 1 month long approval for every single domain name that you deploy your stuff to. So it just wasn't an option at the end of the day. And the hilarious thing is that, do you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but you remember back in the day with credit cards where they would put your credit card on this piece of carbon copy paper?
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They sent me those.
Nice.
And then they sent me like a "we accept Visa and MasterCard" sticker that you put in your window. That's... like they obviously had run me through the
merchant,
the whole like the merchant application, which is again another thing that Stripe does, is that they understand doing business on the internet, and they know that you do not need a window sticker and carbon copy.
right.
So I don't know. It was just a bit of a headache to go through. I really wish that Braintree would work, because the one thing that they do is they give you, the only way I've ever found possible is that they do the PayPal checkout in place, meaning that you don't have to like go to PayPal and come back to the website. You can just do a little pop-up in line without having to ever leave the website.
Yeah, I think when I was initially investigating, I was just a little confused about all of PayPal's offerings and where Braintree fit into that. It looks like I'm on their site now. It looks like I think they've clarified things quite a bit more. I don't know if the site before had this much, I don't know, explanation or clarity of the differences of their different products. But either way, it looks a lot nicer in terms of explanation. I might have to investigate moving to Braintree. I don't know. I haven't done that much investigation about it because I got set up with Stripe and I haven't wanted to change it. But if this can get me a little bit easier PayPal integration and maintain, you know, custom credit card forms, all that stuff, I'd be cool with this.
That I would do it in a heartbeat, because I don't like having to maintain two sets of APIs, one for Stripe and one for PayPal. Like, my killer feature for Stripe would be accept PayPal.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Which I hope maybe one day they will do. I don't know if that's possible or not. But if you have subscriptions, you just have one set of subscriptions with Braintree. But again, that doesn't help you already have subscriptions in Stripe, though. How do you those over, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. That just adds a little bit more.
So as you can tell, there's pros and cons to all of the different ones. And it's not easy. And at the end of the day, it's definitely worth putting in the work to making all of them work, just because it will help increase your sales at the end of the day. Like, I can complain all I want about integrating PayPal, but if people are paying me more money, then I have to kind of be quiet.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about the coding side. After you've selected which services you'd like to go to, how do you start accepting credit cards? Like, does Stripe give you something? Can you build your own? How does that work? Maybe you want to take a stab at that.
Yeah. So like there's several different ways you can go with any of this stuff, right? A lot of it, PayPal or Stripe offer these sort of solutions that make things quite a bit easier on you. For instance, right, the PayPal Express checkout is simply just a button that takes you away to PayPal, and you don't have to worry about the forms or anything like that. You simply just have to worry about catching that token on the hook coming in, or the data coming in. Where Stripe offers something called Stripe Checkout, which is pretty much an iframe, a secured iframe that pops up and allows you to enter your information. Even if you've ever used a Stripe checkout before, the user could enter their information and it would auto-populate their credit card if they wanted to save that information. So it could give you a little bit of ease of use there. But so you have a couple options. You have these built-in tools like Stripe Checkout or PayPal Express that handle a lot for you. Or you have basically the option that you can build your own checkout form and pass that secure data along via their APIs. I know Stripe has their own node package. They have their own front-end package, validating forms, generating tokens, that kind of stuff. So you really have the two options, whether you want to use their built solution or you want to do it yourself with their help kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why you might not want to use Stripe's built-in one is that if you want to customize your form in any way. So when I initially built my course site, I used the Stripe's built-in one. And then I realized that there's no concept of coupon code built into Stripe, because at the end of the day, Stripe does have some nice stuff. But at the end of the day, it is just a utility, which is a credit card processor. So If you want to do coupons, Stripe doesn't have that. You have to build your own coupon solution, which is generally something that your shopping cart will actually do. So I had to move mine over to mine. Actually looks a lot like the Stripe checkout, but it's a custom solution. And it has doing custom fields in there and as well as things for coupons.
Yeah, see, I'm doing coupons and Stripe checkout, but I'm doing the coupon stuff all within my own like cart window. So it's like you have your cart, that's where you can enter your coupon, and then that passes that price along through the Stripe checkout, which obviously it isn't as elegant as just having your own form where you're sending that data all in one blast. But so it is possible, but it does take a little bit different of a solution to do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. The thing about me is that I always wanted it to be like a one page thing, where I didn't want to click someone to click off to a shopping cart. So I don't even have a shopping cart. I just have like a form where you can put in a coupon code and it will update all of that stuff for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I wanted to talk and just explain real quickly how like the tokens work, because sometimes people aren't like what do you do when someone puts in their credit card on your website? Like, yikes, you don't want to touch that.
Right.
Like the possibilities of that are stuff could go really wrong.
Scary.
So the way that it works, it's scary. Exactly. So the way that it works is that you have sort of two libraries when dealing with Stripe or PayPal. You have a client side library, like a Stripe JavaScript library. And what happens is when somebody submits your form, you take their billing address and their credit card, and you send all of that over to Stripe. And Stripe will then check if the credit card is good and all that stuff. And then it will send to you back what's called a token. And that token will, you just take that token and not the credit card data. You take that to your own server side to actually finalize the transaction. Because you can't do this 100% client side. You must have some sort of server side to actually to finalize that transaction. So you have this token, which is sort of like an IOU. The process hasn't been done yet, but you have sort of like pre-qualified the credit card. And then on your server, you go ahead and push through that charge with the token, not your credit card number. And then the token will give you information about whether it failed or worked or and how much it was for and all that good information.
Yeah, and this way their credit card's never hitting your server. You typically with Stripe you get an object with some information like the last four digits and stuff like that, obviously for just display purposes, but you're really like you don't want to touch or you don't want to own their credit card information at any given point. Like that's a huge sign that something's wrong if their credit card information unobfuscated in some way is coming into your server. So right, so you hit the server, you get that token. That token represents all of that sensitive data that you don't want to touch, and can be handled that way through that reference from that point forward.
Exactly, and you even want to be really careful with this stuff, because you don't want to mess around with credit cards at all. And one little tip I can give you is that do not put a name attribute on your credit card input field. And the reason behind that is because if your form is submitted with JavaScript being broken, it should not, like, if you don't intercept the submit request on a form element, then it's just going to submit it via a GET request to your server. And if that is there, it's going to pass along any data, any inputs with a name attribute. And if the credit card is in there, your credit card is going to go into the URL bar, or it's going to be put into your server logs, or it could leak out anywhere, which is, again, not something you ever want to have happen when you're accepting credit cards.
Yeah, and then, you know, you want to make sure you're familiar with the PCI compliance guide, which is really just the payment card industry data security standard. So, like, you're going to want to just Google PCI compliance. You can basically get the frequently asked questions or guides on what exactly that means. But you're going to want to be in constant. I mean, obviously, a lot of these libraries like Stripe Checkout and stuff like that, PayPal Express, make it way easier to stay in PCI compliance. But I remember, you know, that back in the day, I mean, if you're coding your own forms up here and stuff like that, you just have to be very, very, very cognizant about where that data is going. Also, secure the heck out of everything. SSL, obviously. Make sure that you're not accepting payment or even have like forms, inputs, stuff like that without an SSL. So, but yeah, it's a big responsibility taking care of someone else's data here, and especially some sensitive information. So you want to make sure you're following the guidelines really, really closely.
Yeah, exactly. And SSL everywhere, whether you're connecting to sending an email, even if you have Cloudflare, make sure that connection between Cloudflare and your server is SSL'd. Absolutely everything should be locked down tight.
And it's so easy now with Let's Encrypt. Encrypt. Yeah. So no excuses.
One other little tip I have here is that look up the HTML5 autocomplete spec, because you can give names to your inputs, like name equals first name, name equals last name, name equals street. But you can look up the proper autocomplete spec and attach those attributes to your inputs, and that will give you the best case autocomplete. Because I do know that I do this myself. If I'm somewhere without my wallet or somewhere where I don't feel like logging into my LastPass and the autocomplete for my credit card doesn't work, I'll often just be like, meh.
Yeah.
Whatever,
do I really want to like go find my credit card right now?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I know.
I even hate it when it doesn't autofill the three digits on the back of the card.
Yeah. I know. Maybe I might need to write my own form now, because Stripe Checkout disables autocomplete unless you like enter your email there. Like, unless you're entering your email and using your Stripe account, when you hit the actual credit card form, it does. Or at least it does on desktop. I don't know about mobile, but it does on desktop disable credit card autocomplete. So might be a good reason to code your own.
It's pretty sweet. I'm actually looking at recoding my entire checkout form because there's all kinds of new stuff. Like Chrome now has like web payments or something like that. And Safari and mobile Safari have Apple Pay.
Mm-hmm.
So like I really want to like build some sort of beast that's going to be able to handle Stripe, PayPal, all of these different
and
ways that
Stripe can handle
well
auto
as...
pay now. Apple Pay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Apple Pay. But if you use the Stripe checkout, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Caveat.
See, that's a downside to coding your own, is you just flip it on if you are using Stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for me, I have to like code a custom.
Yeah,
handler.
It's something I've been. I mean, we should connect on a code level later, because it is something that I've been looking into as well with the PayPal subscription stuff. Is just like really beefing my whole thing up a little bit and maybe integrating it a little bit more tightly into the site. So yeah, we'll have to chat just a little bit.
Cool. Yeah. Totally. All right. So our quick stop for a sponsor. Our sponsor is FreshBooks, which is cloud accounting software. I've actually been a FreshBooks user myself for, I don't know, maybe 7 years now. It's actually it was a local startup. I don't think it's a startup anymore. They're a pretty big company here from Toronto. And I really, really like FreshBooks for running my own business on it, because obviously it does invoicing. But it has a whole bunch of stuff that makes accounting time a little bit easier. So what I do with FreshBooks is that I put all of my invoices to the clients, to charging for any consulting that I do, to any reimbursements that I need to do. I put all my expenses in there. All of my HST stuff is automatically done. And at the end of the year, when accounting time comes, I hate doing anything accounting. And I have a really good accountant for that. But I just export absolutely everything from that. And my accountant loves it. He said, when I first met with him, he's like, oh, you're on FreshBooks. That's really, really good. So I definitely recommend using FreshBooks, and I want to thank them for sponsoring. So go ahead and check it out. Whether you're just doing a little side job and billing one or two people, or whether you're trying to run an entire business with all the interworkings of paying yourself and doing expenses and managing different currencies and whatnot. So it's at freshbooks.com/syntax, and then make sure you enter syntax in the how did you hear about us section. Thanks again. Let's talk about some pain points, some stuff that's the not so fun part of accepting credit cards on the internet. Mm-hmm. The biggest one for me is dealing with people's blocked credit cards.
Yeah.
So you try to buy a course from some random guy in Canada, I also charge in US. A Canadian business is charging you US. Often what will happen is either the bank will block it entirely because they're like, this is fishy. Or what will happen is that Stripe will block it because they have their own. We'll talk about this in a second. They have a thing called Radar, mm-hmm. which will set different levels and different rules for blocking it. So often what I have to do is tell people to call their bank, which is a pain, and they tell their bank that the charge is fine, and then they have to come back and try it again. What about you? You ever run into troubles like that?
Yeah, I get a lot of declined cards that you have to, you know, you get emails. So and so, I've tried a whole bunch to subscribe or to buy this thing, and it, you know, it's telling me my card's declined. Can you give me more information? And then you go into Stripe, and basically the answer is your card was declined.
Yeah.
So it is a huge pain point because you don't necessarily always have something to say like, oh, your thing was expired or whatever. Sometimes they give you that information, but sometimes it's just flat out card was declined. And I, you know, a couple of times you message Stripe and say, hey, what's going on? And they'll say, oh, well, we can fix this one. This person's legit. They'll fix it for you.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. But I found the experience to be most of the time just say, yeah, this is why it was suspicious. I've only, one out of a handful has been allowed to go through. And other ones are you just have to tell the customer, hey, you're out of luck giving me money right now, unless you want to do it through PayPal. Or if, for me, with the subscriptions, it's you're out of luck, you know. So that is a total pain point. And like, I understand you have to be pretty diligent with these rules, or else you run the risk of being open to a lot of fraud and security stuff that way.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's that. There's the bank actually blocking the card, which recently Stripe has made I don't know if they recently got more info from the bank that blocks it, but it used to just be this card is blocked. Mm-hmm. We don't know why. And now it is, this card has been declined by the bank, and here's the best reason that we possibly have from you. And then there's, on Stripe's side, Stripe will also determine if someone trying to buy a course is fraudulent. And for example, if you are, let's say you're in the UK, or you have a UK card, but you are trying to buy it from Vietnam, that's a huge red flag, mm-hmm. And that will usually get blocked. However, sometimes people are vacationing, right, and they are trying to buy something, and they're like, what's going on? So you have to sort of tell them to call their bank and to allow it.
Yeah, I think most of the times that I've found things get blocked are because, oh, this is a Czech card purchased in this country, and it's being used in this country, or something like that, where cross-country, right, the card is living in one country and is being used in another. And sometimes they're there for work, right? Like you said, sometimes they're there vacationing. But that is a bummer that that frequently happens, but again, you know, you're opening yourself up for fraud if otherwise.
Exactly. And what's really cool is just a couple of months ago, Stripe released this thing called Radar, which allows you to really fine tune what gets blocked and what doesn't get blocked. So like, for example, if somebody fails the street check, where like they give you the credit card is fine, the CVC is fine, but the like the postal code or the zip code and the address they provided doesn't line up. Because in most cases, the credit card will just push that through anyway if you screw up the address in somehow. And so you can really like fine tune what gets blocked and what doesn't get blocked and the different levels of risk that you're trying to accept. I'm not going to talk too much about what my rules are so people don't rip me off. But I can tell you that I have, in my situation, just because I have a bit of an international audience, I've tinkered around with it. And I found like a pretty good level where I'm not getting too much fraud. But it's also like not, because when I first had it, it was blocking way more than, it was blocking more good transactions than it was fraudulent ones, which was ending me losing money.
Yeah.
So now with this Radar, I lose a bit every month from fraud, but I think I make more because of it not blocking good people.
So I haven't modified my Radar, but I do get a lot of blocked ones due to Radar. I didn't know you could relax it. I always thought it was like you could make it more strict.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can go anyway, and then you can also write your own rules. So if you have sort of you got your finger on the pulse of what's going on. Like another one for me is that often people from, I forget which country it is, but a lot of countries that are around the U.S., people will have U.S. credit cards, but they don't live in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that works, but those are very valid. So you have to know about that as well. And I think the other big one that I get is people are forgetting, because what it does is it shows up on the credit card as like boss type/West Boss. And I'll often get calls from confused secretaries or people's significant others, mm-hmm. being like, what is this? And then I have to like be like, is someone in your family a developer? Oh, yeah, someone. Okay, well, they bought a course from me and have to explain what it is. They're like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then what else do we have here? Any other pain points that you or things to look out for on your end?
I just changes in API. You know, you want to make sure, like what Wes said, the PayPal's API isn't versioned, so... have your finger on the pulse a little bit as to what what those APIs are doing or how they're changing or evolving. Follow those guys on Twitter and stuff like that. But it's really, mm-hmm. it's not a huge, I've probably had one or two issues for that ever. So just something to think about.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about like getting your money. So once you have received money from Stripe or PayPal, the money then goes into your account and you need to then get it out somehow. So the easiest way to do that is to deposit it right into a bank account that you've then linked to your account. And that's what I do. I have daily, weekly deposits right from Stripe and PayPal. Where I'll just clean out my account and deposit that right into an actual account. What about you? Do you do the same?
Yep, I do everything direct payment. And Stripe is really good about, you can choose the interval at which it deposits. So you can have it do once a month or whatever. So I just have it depositing, I think, every week. That way you get just like a bundled deposits. But yeah, so direct deposit. Stripe you got to do, or PayPal you have to do manually, I believe. Because it just puts it in your PayPal wallet. So every week or so you just go through your PayPal wallet to send funds to bank, but yeah, mostly just connecting your bank account direct deposit.
Yeah, exactly. So one little gotcha for international, which I guess I'm international, I charge in US but I am in Canada. So you can, in Canada, you set up a US business bank account on your Canadian account, and then they will deposit that money into your US account. And that's really important because you can get Stripe and PayPal to convert it for you, but they convert it at like a brutal rate, mm-hmm. and they will take 3 or 4% to themselves, which is not something you want to do. So what I then do is I deposit into a U.S. bank account, and then I take that money to a foreign exchange company that takes 0.5% rather than the 4%, and then converts it for me. And it's kind of cool because you can, you have to play the markets. So you have to watch foreign exchange rates go up and down. And when you think it's good, and that's what your foreign exchange person can do, then you transfer that over to your native currency, or you just can sit on it in the U.S. currency as well.
Yeah, this, I mean, just hearing all this stuff makes me just pretty thankful that I'm not international, because it seems like it just adds a huge layer of complexity to everything.
It is. And even in, so another reason, like PayPal, why I don't like them is that Stripe will deposit into a U.S. Canadian U.S. account. PayPal will not deposit into a Canadian U.S. account. It will only deposit into U.S. accounts, which I think that they do this because they want to screw you on the conversion rate and make another. Mm-hmm. Like I used to get, like, at the end of the day, I was getting like 10-11% dinged by PayPal. Jeez. After I had taken the fee, taken the conversion fee, all of that stuff. So what somebody figured out is that there's this one bank in Canada called the Royal Bank of Canada. And the reason why you can't deposit into a Canadian account is because you need a routing number. And in Canada, we don't have routing numbers. We have transit numbers. Mm-hmm. So somebody figured out that you can open up a Royal Bank Canadian account and then send the money to the U.S. Royal Bank, because they have branches in the U.S. And it just magically gets redirected over, which is huge. Saves me thousands of dollars a year. Yeah, so that was quite the ordeal to get set up, but well worth it. And I'm from Canada. The stuff is easy in Canada, and in some other countries, it's the stuff is near impossible, where there is no PayPal and there is no Stripe. So Stripe has this thing called what is it called? I have it here somewhere.
They had some big international.
Yeah, what's it called? Stripe Atlas.
Atlas. I remember because the landing page for it was really nice with those like flags diagonally.
Yeah, Stripe has some of the best, along with some of the best API design. They have some of the best like front end.
I use Stripe as a design inspiration source maybe once a week for various aspects. There are so many things about the entire site that is just like awesome. And now what was the only thing lagging behind was like the admin dashboard, and they've redesigned the admin dashboard in the past year, but even week by week there's improvements to it, and like really nice stuff. And you see that design language really transfer through even to the admin stuff a bunch more now.
It's amazing. I love it. So Stripe Atlas is the sort of they'll set you up with a U.S. business, a U.S. business bank account. They'll set you up with everything that you need to run an online business. So if you're from a country where you can't do any of this stuff, it will handle all of the legal everything for you, which I think is super cool. I don't think that it makes sense to do it from Canada, but definitely if you're from somewhere else, I would take a look at that. Oh, TransferWise, this is another thing. TransferWise, if you need to convert currency, I have people that will convert it all for me. But TransferWise does very, very, some of the best conversion rates out there. And the way that it works is pretty neat if you watch the video. I won't attempt to explain how they do it with holding groups of money from people. But essentially, it hooks you up with people trying to buy the opposite currency, and then you just trade money with them, which is really, really neat. So big fan of that. The only downside is that it doesn't do direct deposits from a Canadian bank account, so you have to send them a wire, which is a pain because you have to go to the bank and do a wire, for me at least. And then also it's expensive to do a wire. I think it's about $50. So it's better for me to use an external service.
Sure.
Taxes. How do you do taxes, Scott?
Yeah, I think I just accept taxes on sales or sales tax in Colorado. That's it. I don't know what the rules are for Canadian companies, but I mean it's like a big deal here, because right, you buy so much stuff on Amazon that like,
yeah,
you only have to pay taxes on it. I don't want to say this incorrectly, but I believe you only have to pay taxes on stuff from Amazon in states where Amazon has like a presence.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, otherwise the user or the purchaser themselves is like left to deal with that like tax liability. I don't know how much that is like a big deal or not, but so yeah, sales in Colorado, that's it for me, just because obviously it's my only outpost here. So how about you?
That's pretty simple. Mine's a little bit more complicated. So how it works in Canada, and when I was first getting started, I like didn't understand how this worked. So I spent a lot of time on the phone with the CRA, Canada Revenue Agency, and I like explained to them how this, I'm like, I'm selling a digital good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I need to charge? And they said, you have to charge everybody your local tax rate unless you can prove that they are not from that province or state or whatever it is. So, and I asked them, like, can I just grab that by an IP address? And they said, no, that's not good enough because people can use VPN. So if you check out via PayPal on my website, you'll notice that when you come back from PayPal, I ask you for your address. And like, that's weird because why do you need my address if it's just PayPal? But mm-hmm. I need to keep that on file to show that I do not need to pay taxes for anyone that is outside of Canada. So if you buy it from me and you're outside of Canada, there's no tax. And if you buy it from me and it is inside of Canada, I have to charge the destination tax rate. So every province in Canada has its own HST and GST or PST. It's all different kinds of taxes. So I have to figure out what is their tax rate and then fold that into the invoice. And that's super complicated. And I don't want to have to charge people more. So what I end up doing is for Canadian customers, I just eat the whatever percentage it is. And then at the end of the year, I have to pay out to every single province, mm-hmm. whatever it is that I collected.
I also
on behalf.
I eat any taxes. So like, I just assume everyone is not from Colorado.
Yep.
And then I have a report that will output that. And I actually would be really interested in knowing if I legally need those records. So if anybody knows, hit us up, because I'm pretty sure you don't need something like that, because I haven't encountered that. But that would be interesting to know as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One other like sort of bummer, the way that I do that is that if a business buys my course from Canada, I do charge them tax, or I pay out the tax for that. But businesses don't actually have to pay HST, or they do have to pay it, but they get it back at the end of the year. So if I buy a $1,000 laptop, I have to pay $1,130, but I get the $130 back at the end of the year. So that's one downside, but it greatly simplifies the checkout experience. I just tell people like, it's $100 and it's $100 at the end of the day. That's right. It at the end of
yeah.
the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's I don't know, simplifying to me, that simplifying the checkout experience and like the price and all that stuff like that, I think that's more valuable than having to, really give your users all that information or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. Because I often go to websites where it's like pages and pages of input fields, and it's so exhausting to have to input all of that stuff, and then it recalculates how much you owe in taxes and
shipping and
whatnot.
Handling
like,
and
yeah, like I just want someone to put in their credit card number, press a button, and it for to charge them. And if I have to pay a little bit more in some situations, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Next, we have accepting Bitcoin, which is another thing that Stripe Checkout makes really easily doable, just by simply clicking a checkbox and having your wallet, your address, your Bitcoin
so
address.
So do you accept Bitcoin on your site then?
I don't, only because I was accepting Bitcoin and I turned it off briefly, and I haven't turned it back on because there was a change in the API and I just didn't want to, I didn't have time to update my code at that time. So I just, I wanted to update the rest of the API and I just turned it off. So it's on my list of things to do is to turn it back on. I believe it's like one of my high issues on Bitbucket over here to do, but just haven't done it yet. Just haven't turned it back on. It's probably as simple as like flipping a switch and then changing maybe like five lines of code in my code. If that.
Did you get a lot of people buying with Bitcoin when you had it turned on?
A decent, yeah, decent.
Really?
Yeah, and now that people have made so much money on Bitcoin, you know, one of the challenges of Bitcoin. For people who don't know, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency amongst others that are like fighting for this sort of cryptocurrency space, which will sort of win out. You know, there's a whole bunch of different competing cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin being the largest. They recently had like a split. I believe there's like Bitcoin Cash now and Bitcoin. I don't want to speak too much on it because I'm not educated enough. But, you know, really the whole Bitcoin system, people have made a lot of money by buying Bitcoin when it was really, you know, what, even $1,000 a Bitcoin, and now it's 3,000 or whatever it is. I haven't checked the prices. They've been like going
up. It's over 3,000 bucks today. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been going up and down like crazy. So people have made a ton of money and they don't have a lot of great ways to get that money out of there without accepting a huge tax burden or something like that. So people might be, again, like you said, having this like sort of PayPal account that's just sort of sitting there with a whole ton of cash in it. They might just have a Bitcoin account sitting there with a whole ton of cash in there. Yeah, fun money, right? And fun money that you've made a whole bunch on out of nothing is definitely fun money to spend. So, yeah, it's one of those things I should be... should be getting actually in there. Maybe I'll do it today. Who knows? Maybe I'll
that'd be sweet. This call. Turn it on.
Yeah. It's a Stripe. Like I said, Stripe checkout gets it for you for free. So yeah,
it's pretty neat. I've been just accepting Bitcoin manually and I've maybe done, I don't know, 4-5 transactions with it. I did a couple years ago, people paid with it. And like, I think out of the 4 transactions I've sold, maybe like $180 worth of product, but it's up over $1,000 now because
the rate
increased so much. So that was pretty neat. I definitely want to turn that on though, because I think it's becoming a lot more popular and why not, right? Like if it's worth it, if 10 people a year actually end up using it.
Yeah. And I would be interested in Stripe implementing Ethereum for payments. I don't know if you know much about Ethereum. It'd be a great topic to talk about sometime on this show. And I think that's the cryptocurrency I'm most interested in. So obviously I would be very psyched if Stripe were to at some point add that. Obviously, you know, it has to reach a level of mainstreamness before it enters something like that. But we'll see, you know.
Cool. So I'm still sort of sitting on the sidelines, but definitely going to be getting into it fairly soon.
Yeah.
Let's move over to our sick picks.
Sick picks.
I'll go first. My sick pick this week is Chef Steps, which is a YouTube channel that teaches you how to cook things. And it's really cool because they do a lot of experiments. And I think that's the way that they approach explaining how things work and why they've done it. I take a lot of like kind of inspiration in my own explanations when I do my own tutorials. So there's a lot of cooking channels out there on YouTube and whatnot, but this has been one of the best that has really jived with me. So if you're into like quick ways to learn how to cook new things, check out Chef Steps on YouTube.
Cool. Yeah, I love you know, there's obviously like the negative sides of YouTubes and stuff like that. YouTubes, the negative side of YouTube, but like YouTube is really just the greatest resource in the world for learning anything. I was just on a YouTube channel called The Lawn Care Nut. I'm like mowing my lawn, like trying to figure this stuff out. I'm not good at it. I don't know anything about it. And here I am like watching YouTube. Oh, okay. Here's what to do. You know, it's I'll definitely be checking those out. I love educational YouTube. It's by far like one of the greatest improvements in life overall.
Totally. Especially like a 10-minute videos where you got like, if you're having lunch or whatever, I always throw something on And if you can learn a thing or two, it's great.
Chef steps. All right. Yeah, I'll check that out.
What about you?
My sick pick is a really high end, but really like reasonably priced tea store called what-cha.com. So W-H-A-T-. Yeah, there's a lot of, well, I am in Colorado here. So, this tea is like, it's really high end tea in the way that like, this isn't the stuff that you're going to find everywhere. I'm a big loose leaf tea drinker. And there's several shops that I've been going to for a long time. But in terms of like the highest quality and rare, more rare side of teas, this what-cha is like the best place ever. They have a lot of like really whatever kind of teas you're interested in. They even have a lot of teas that like, or like classifications of teas that you don't see a lot of here in the States, like yellow tea, which is less oxidization than green tea, but more than white tea. So it's a little bit in there. You get a little bit brighter color. So those yellow teas are really nice. There's also pu'ars and dark teas, which are fermented, like really heavy smoky teas. And and some of these pu'ars are like pretty rare. I mean, or at least a little, they take a long time to make. I remember my dad came home from China one time with a pu'ar that was like just wrapped in paper and this big old, it's like a big old brick of tea, and you break off a chunk and it's not for everyone. The pu'ars and some of these stronger dark teas have a little bit different flavor. But like I said, this place is where you're going to go to get a whole bunch of teas that you did not know existed. And it's really high quality. I bought like a big box of stuff there. They sent me a ton of stuff for free. So really, really cool little place. Yeah, if you're into high quality loose leaf teas.
I love a good pu'ar.
Yeah, good pu'ar, man.
Pu'ar all day.
Oddly enough, it does smell slightly like pu'ar, but it's not the best smelling tea in the world, those dark teas, but they can be pretty yummy.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to our last one. I don't know if you have anything to plug. I think we've plugged all of our courses, but obviously my courses are at westboss.com/courses. But I wanted to just plug somebody else's course right now, just because I ran through it real quickly, and it was really good. It's howtographql.com. It's put together by the folks behind GraphQL, and it's a really nice introduction to like what is GraphQL, what are the core concepts, what is the architecture that you need, all the different stuff that you need, and it's just like a nice high level. Maybe spend a couple hours on it and you get an idea of what it is, and then you can move forward into some chewier stuff to actually implement it.
Yeah, it's really a well-designed resource, and that's always a good indication. If you can tell like the educational resource is like taking the time to like do that design element of it, you know it's usually going to get into everything pretty nicely. So yeah, how to GraphQL. Cool. I guess my shameless plug will just be my YouTube channel, Level Up Tuts on YouTube. I'm releasing a bunch of free stuff and, like I said, new adventures, kind of different series than I'm used to doing. So, yeah, check it out. There's just going to be a bunch of new content there very soon, all the time. So, yeah.
So that's it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all our shows. Don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player and drop a review if you like this show. Until next time, peace.